Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I don't think I could handle the athleticism of biking that many miles.
No,
but
could do
but
it. But
when you pitch it about the fucking in the tents, I'm like, well, maybe I could just figure it out. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and what a treat to have Tracy E. Gilchrist on the podcast. She is a giant in the gay media world. If you've read any article about anything relating to anything queer in the entertainment world, odds are Tracy is connected to it. She was not only the editor-in-chief of The Advocate during this time, she and the print team won the GLAAD Award for Outstanding Magazine, and she has interviewed so many fucking huge stars doing cover stories, features. In this episode alone, we hear about chats she's had with Margot Robbie and Charlize Theron, Kate Winslet, Chris Evans, Sharon Stone, and she even hints about the celeb she likes interviewing the least. But before we get into that, I want to thank you all for the amazing and horny thanks you've been sending about this week's Gay Ass Sex Diary. We release them now on Mondays, and they just keep getting better and better. In fact, this one is so good, I'm going to play a clip right now. And just as a warning, it is not safe for work. If you are listening out loud in front of children, or perhaps you're with your parents, why don't we skip ahead 20 seconds? 25 seconds to be careful. Okay, we good? The horny clip starts now. If we get into the weeds of the actual fucking, do you have any requirement before you get fucked, whether it's being eaten out, whether it's a finger blast or otherwise?
No, I can go pretty much 0 to 60. I do like to see a face. I love an anonymous moment. I love a stranger moment. But I'm not an asset girly. I do like to at least see the face. You know what I mean? I just want to know who you are. So
yeah, you're a traditionalist first and foremost. You like to at least see a pair of eyes before they enter you.
I'll take one eye. I'll take sunglasses.
So good. And let me just say, this week's sex diary subject, he's everything I like. He is sex positive, he is funny, he is a married, sexy man. So if you want that full episode, go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast to sign up there, and they're gonna keep on coming. We're going to end this episode with Tracy E. Gilchrist. We talk about mall cruising, fucking outdoors, and she chooses to save a lesbian character actress that deserves the world. Enjoy and stay lesbionic. I have so many things I want to dive into, and the first thing is I want to have a bit of a bit of an intervention because I need you to explain yourself. On your bio on one of your profiles, it says that you are a Carol fetishist. Tracy, what the gosh darn fook are we talking? I mean, obviously the lesbian tome of Carol is huge, but the Carol fetishisms, give me the deets.
Well, you know, I think someone else called me a Carol fetishist, which is, you know, essentially I rewatch the film every year on December 23rd, me and my cat and a glass of bourbon. I am a single lesbian. If you couldn't tell already.
What a beautiful image, though, to picture you warmed up by the fire. You've got Duchess meowing as Kate Therese. Blanchett. Are you Therese? As Therese is just that movie, even as a gay man for me, I've kind of always been in love with Kate Blanchett, though. And I know this isn't a highbrow reference, but I'm going to make it. Are you a Benjamin Button girlina?
I have only seen it once.
And that's okay. I think most people either saw it once or not at all. Watching Brad Pitt reverse in age and then watching Cate Blanchett have a body double do ballet, honey, I was seated.
As you should be. They were both so luscious in that film. Yeah.
So luscious. And Cate, truly, I do find her to be one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood and in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm also now, I mean, yeah. So back to like my Carol fetishism is I reference it all the time. It is like the gold standard of lesbian films for me. And I know that's controversial for some because, you know, some people are not thrilled about the age difference and others are not thrilled that it was a lesbian period piece. But I love all that kind of cloak and dagger, is she, isn't she? Because that's how I came out. I was gonna say,
well, the age thing of it all is it the most politically correct, but almost every single person who comes on this podcast has had an experience as a young person, maybe having some sort of connection to an quote unquote older person. And I think that's almost like, there's a lot of gray area and black and whiteness of what is not okay, but in that gray area, I think Carol, sorry, I'm gonna take a public stance, but I'm pro Carol age gap. Sorry.
Well, me too. And I'm thinking, if it's the 50s and you're in a department store and you make a sexual vibe connection with somebody, you're going with that person.
And if it's Cate Blanchett, you're going with Cate, honey. Yes. I'm going with Cate.
Yes, yes. Well, and also, I mean, this was Patricia Highsmith's, she wrote the novel, The Price of Salt. This was her personal experience. She was a shop girl who met an older socialite from New Jersey, of all places.
Really?
And I mean, they did not have a fling. This was her fantasy about what would have unfolded. So she's basically Therese. Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, the amount of times I had a mall fantasy growing up, are you joking? I actually haven't thought about it in years, but the mall to me was such a place rife with sexual tension because, like, you're walking with your, well, I'll guess use eye language. I'm walking with my mom. I'm like looking at either the husbands or the like teenage or older guys hanging out with their friends. Am I looking at a sweatpant? And maybe noticing a rummage, sure. There's also a cruising culture, which I was never privy to. But like, there's something about a mall and a shopping experience that you're not only looking for clothes, right? Like,
right. I forgot that mall bathrooms in the 80s were like cruising spots. I forgot about that. I mean, not for me, not for lesbians, but my gay friends did tell me that.
Yeah, wait, can I, not to make you the voice of all lesbians, but can you, I'm more privy to the gay male cruising culture, but like, what are lesbians doing out in the open in terms of cruising? Is it more just like, hey, what's your cat's name? What's your cat's name?
I mean, yes, occasionally there's that, but I will just say this, I am an older lesbian now, and I'm a little invisible, frankly, out in the world.
Really?
It's really, I mean, especially in LA, maybe if I were, I don't know, in
Vermont,
the Dakotas or something.
Oh, yeah. You would clean up in SD. Right? Are you kidding?
But of course, I chose to live in LA. I will say, though, occasionally you do just get that, like, what's up? Like that look. Or you know, or somebody just kind of turning their head and you're like, okay. Yeah. So there's a little of that, but I don't think it's, it doesn't, in my experience, end up like in a bathroom stall.
Well, listen, I truly am not just buttering your biscuit. You could tell me any age and I'd be like, whatever the skincare is, it's a glow. She's a stun. And you're 10 out of 10. So whatever invisibility cloak the lesbians are doing right now, yeah, I would tear off. Before I get into so many of my specific questions for you, I do think I want to rip off the gay ass bandaid and ask you the famous podcast question. So, Tracy, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Oh, God, there's so many people to blame, really. I have two directions. One, mm-hmm. I will say I'm going to do my pop culture direction first because I've always been obsessed with pop culture. Very early on, Pamela Sue Martin as Nancy Drew in the Nancy Drew Mysteries. And of course,
huge. She
would go on to play Fallon in Dynasty. So that also gets at the heart of my show. I'm like, I'm also a show queen, like an inner gay man.
Thank God. Thank God, Tracy. Yeah. Wait, how does that apply to your inner queen? Like what's your, actually, since you're bringing the inner queen up, you tweeted during the Grammys, Annie Lennox, Tracy Chapman, Joni Mitchell, and Billy Joel. All this night needs is a song from Les Mis, and it sums up my entire 18-year-old gay ass.
Yeah.
Thank you for the usage of gay ass. So you're a Les Mis queen.
Oh, I mean, I loved Les Mis. My first musicals, because my mom had the albums, were Camelot and Man of La Mancha. And so those were my early ones, Fiddler, Sound of Music, etc. And then of course, I was an Evita queen. I could sing Evita from start to finish. I thought I was Che. And when I was 11 years old, all of that. I love Les Mis. I love the Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff. I didn't get more sophisticated until later. Like I knew Into the Woods, but my Sondheim education did not come until later. It was all very bombastic early.
That's advanced gay though. I feel like Sondheim is like graduate school and we can't be expected to just jump into getting our MFA or whatever the fuck people get.
Exactly.
Wait, so Nancy Drew.
Yes. Yeah, so Pamela Sue Martin, who went on to be Fallon in Dynasty, played Nancy Drew in the Nancy Drew Mysteries, which was Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys. And that, of course, was Sean Cassidy and Parker. I can't think of his last name. He was married to Kirstie Alley, the one with the Parker Stevenson. Yeah, that was a series in the 70s. So Pamela Sue Martin, Valerie Bertinelli as Barbara on One Day at a Time. What it did.
Valerie's gorge. Absolutely. I fully get that.
Also, we were both young, so this was okay. Janet Jackson as Penny on Good Times. What a cutie. Janet. She was adorable. And then here's the big, big, big one, though. It was such a big crush that, like, if I misbehaved, it got taken away from me. Lindsay Wagner as the Bionic Woman. I was obsessed with
it. I'm Googling. I was doing really well. Lindsay mm-hmm. Wagner as, oh, wow. Stun.
Yeah. Well, you remember the $6 million man. She was the woman version of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and wow.
She lived in Ojai, California, which is also like very queer. And sure, there's a lot of lesbians up there. So.
Oh, I'm sure. I love that you also know like what lesbianic town she was living in. But I also, you've got gorgeous taste in women. There's so many amazing references here. And by the way, Janet Jackson for me, I had some confusing thoughts when I would see her low rise jeans and some of her music videos and like the V line. I feel like V lines transcend gender. And
I think so too. Mm-hmm.
So you really are a pop culture queen because all of these references. For the Nancy Drew of it all, what is that like a lesbianic? God, I feel like I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm treating a lesbian guest like I'm like in a master class and I'm studying abroad. So in terms of,
I always wanted to be a professor. So
listen,
and if I were to teach anything, this would be it. So yeah.
Professor Les, teach the kids. The Nancy Drew of it all, is it because she's solving mysteries that's also adding to the allure, or is it primarily a physical lust?
So with Nancy Drew, she was kind of, I mean, she had a boyfriend, but he was really like sidelined and she was very smart. I also read the books when I was a kid. I was very into the books. So her as a character, she's very smart and scrappy and unafraid, brave. So I liked that about her. And one of her best friends is, I mean, they didn't say it. She had a best friend named George, a girl who obviously is a lesbian.
A girl named George, honey.
Who was a tomboy. Yeah. So, but
what
I was
an iconic
never...
name.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
So good.
But I always liked like the femmes, and Nancy was a little more of a femme and George was the tomboy because I was the tomboy. Right. So.
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah. I do want to get into the tomboyness of your youth because that article that you wrote in The Advocate about your all-girls summer camp, it hit me so hard. And before I get into what really resonated with me about that, you mentioned that your parents would take away one of your loves, the bionic woman. So were they, do you think they were privy to these girl crushes you were having? What was that relationship like?
You know, actually, I don't think they were. It's so strange because I look back and I'm like, I was gay as hell. Why did you not know? And my mom, both of my parents, they divorced fairly young. But when I came out to my parents separately, they were both really incredible about it. Although my mother is a typical New England mother. I'm from Connecticut. So I'll try to be brief this. Do you want to hear my little coming out to my mother story?
Of course.
Okay. So I had been living with this woman, Regina, Reggie for short, in Connecticut. And my mom and stepdad were living in New Jersey and had a sailboat, not far from Seaside Heights. So Regina and I got invited down for the weekend. They didn't know that we were together. They just thought we were roommates.
Yeah.
So we went, had a really lovely time. We were very careful about making sure that we didn't reveal too much or anything. I was just not ready for the conversation. I think I was 19. And I came home. My mother was being weird on the phone. I called my sister. I was like, Pam, why is mom being weird? She thinks that you and Reggie are gay. And I said, we are. Like, that was the first time I said it to my sister. And my sister said, well, I'm not getting involved. So I called my mother and I said, Mom, what's going on? You're acting strange. And she finally came out and said, well, I think you and Reggie are gay. And I said, we are. And I said, how did you finally figure that out? And she said, I've never seen you be so respectful of another human being in your entire life.
Drag me, Mom.
But that's a New England mother. And then, you know, she did the typical, like, I just want you to be happy. And it's, you know, I just want you to have a good life. But that was it. And she's always been incredibly supportive. Same with my dad. So I think in terms of like, you know, the punishment, I don't think it had anything to do with that. It was just like, you're not going to watch The Bionic Woman if you're
exactly. You know, well, they were just like, you know, Tracy loves this, take it away. But it's really relatable to me that like, you think you're being so obvious when you finally come out, we are shocked by the surprise of others. And I'm just having so many of my own memories about the almost reverse judgment I felt towards my family when I saw that they did not see I was gay. You know, it was almost like I was frustrated that all of my torment was actually not translating as much as I thought it would. I've said this before, and it's a pretty clear image of the mental space I grew up in, but I have a twin brother who would come into my room and simply to be a jerky brother, and we have forgiven and moved on. That's why I'm allowed to tell this story. But to be a jerky twin brother, he would come into my room and look me dead in the eye and go, so I heard a rumor. And then I would sit there and go, what did you hear? And he did it enough times I knew he was fucking with me, but every single time I was convinced he was about to say, I heard the rumor that you're gay. And he never, ever said that. And then when I came out to him, he was shocked that I was gay and that I had even been thinking that. And so it's like your mom, when you know, she says, I'm worried or I'm thinking that you're gay. And then for you to say, well, I actually am. That's years of conversation that you were probably thinking of having.
Yeah, years and years. I mean, I don't want to get too serious because I know this is a fun podcast.
Hey, we go. We roller coaster here.
Well, a few years earlier, my sister was going through some things and She's 9 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was up with her, but she was an asshole, frankly. And I was at work at this bakery in Plainville, Connecticut. My mom called. Again, I could hear something in her voice. And I said, Mom, what's going on? And this was the word. Pam says you're queer. Mm. And I was like, because I didn't identify with that word at the time.
Right.
In the late 80s, it was really kind of used as
a slur.
Yeah, it was a slur. So I didn't identify as queer. Had she said gay, I might have come out just then. But I said, I'm not. And I felt like I wasn't lying. And she said, well, I told her, I don't care if you are. I love you anyway. So I had already wow. had that background. And, you know, my sister then went on to be great. But
yeah. At what age did that conversation happen?
That was 19. So I guess when I actually came out to my wow. brothers, I was 20, because it was like a year and a half before.
Well, it's yeah. almost like we're witnessing yeah. in hindsight the stages of coming mm-hmm. out. I mean, it's so interesting to think about the conversations in hindsight. And I don't want this at all. But if there were to be hidden cameras that were covering every time the word gay was mentioned in any part of my life growing up, mm. it would probably be a very interesting montage reel of yeah. the attitudes that and people said it, because, you know, when you're fucking a closet case, you're very attuned to how people are talking about gay people. It's the same way that I look at men's hairlines when I walk around, because I wish I had better hair. Like, hello. Or it's like, it's a little deeper than that. But like, there's everything that we, you know, that we feel either self-conscious or having tough feelings about, we look around in the world. And so when your sister, you know, says you're queer in not the nicest way, I'm sure that is one train stop to Queerville. And I'm so glad that your parents were so open and receptive, especially being what sounds like sort of Connecticut. Can I use the word WASP? Is that okay?
Very, very WASPy. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So like that's, you know, I think that might be one of the reasons why you've grown this amazing career of like advocating for queer representation in the media and everything you write. It's just, you've interviewed so many amazing people. But speaking of your work, I want to get into this story you wrote about going to your all-girls summer camp.
Yeah.
It's so beautifully written, because you take us to you being a counselor after having been a camper there for so many years, and then the sort of love relationship you had with another counselor. And mm-hmm. it's almost like you lived a fantasy of mine, because I did go to a camp that I yeah. did have all these pent up feelings for, and I never had the like beautiful moment of actually expressing myself, because I was just so young and afraid. And but you talk about your Ring of Keys moment with a counselor who came out to you. You talk about so many formative moments. But the first one I want to talk about is when you were a young person at this camp and you were having these crushes on either the counselors or other campers. Was like a first kiss a part of this summer camp? And tell the girls yeah. listening, where geographically can we picture Tracy at this all-girls camp?
This is in northwestern Connecticut. Mm. It's a town called Torrington, which is not a nice town, but it's right on the outskirts near Goshen and Litchfield. So mm-hmm. a lot of people know about Litchfield.
Orange is the New Black?
No, that's the name of the... That was in New York. That's the name of the... yeah, no, Litchfield's very she. I know that Lena Hall has a home there.
Okay, Lena Hall. You are a queen.
I am a queen. I'm telling you. But yeah, so it's right in this very, it's up a hill, very farm on one hand, you know, it's out in the woods, and it's like tents, but they're on wooden platforms. They wouldn't have cabins. They're wooden platforms with a tarp over them.
So you're like camping.
Tarp. Well, you know, we slept in cots and things like that. So, but yeah. Yeah, we're out
no
there.
No wonder it was such a breeding ground for lesbians. I mean, when I'm having a devastating memory pop up with, I went to like an arts camp in Michigan, and one time they took us out on a little hike, which we love a stroll through the woods. But then we went to a clearing and they said, okay, y'all, this is actually where you're sleeping tonight. You're not going to be sleeping in your cabin. And we pitched up fucking fit. I mean, think about all these like queenie 12-year-olds. Are you kidding me? My parents are not going to be happy. And I still to this day don't know if they were just playing a joke on us or if they were actually planning on us sleeping there and they changed their minds because we were such bitches about it. But like, there's something about camp to me that I felt at my, you know, theater camp, like this double-edged sword of like feeling welcomed by being in the artsy element of it, but still being so hetero. And like my counselor, my straight guy counselor would talk about fucking one of the girl counselors. And keep in mind, we're again like 12 years old. And I'm not joking, Tracy. That's true. Maybe would be like an arrest. Like this could be like, you know, he could have gone to prison. But like he told us how he tried anal for the first time and how much he didn't like it. I mean,
so
dark,
dark. That's
did I still think about sleeping with him? Of course I did, because I was losing my fucking mind. But yeah, you must have had it. I mean, obviously, I read you had so many formative moments at this camp.
Yeah, I went there from the time I was 7 until 14 as a camper. And then I was a counselor for several years. And then my life is kind of all over the place. But so in my early 20s, I was in a touring company of O Calcutta. Do you know O Calcutta?
I've definitely seen like an old timey poster of O Calcutta, but I could not tell you a single piece of info about it.
It was on Broadway for a long time because there's scenes with full nudity. It's basically a series of vignettes about sex. You know, John Lennon wrote one, Sam Shepard wrote one. It's basically trash. But we were in a touring company. I lived on a rock and roll bus, and over 100,000 people have seen me nude on stage. But so one year I was like, what am I gonna do this summer? We're not touring and we're gonna go back out in the fall. And so I called my friend who was running my camp and I said, can I come back in an administrative position? And I did. So between O Calcutta, I went back to Girl Scout camp. And yeah, I had many, many years of experiences there over time. I kept going back to it. It was the summer of 1990. I think I may have written this. I fell in love with an English woman from Newcastle. And if time had stopped that summer, I think I would have been fine for the rest of my life. If time had stopped, that would have been okay. It was ideal. Yeah.
What a beautiful way of saying that. If time could stop, I know exactly what you're saying. And it's one of the rare magic experiences in life to feel that sense of euphoria that constantly. I think almost probably because you were at Girl Scout camp, knowing there was an end, it elevated the feelings that much more. I mean, am I projecting when I say you probably had a moment laying on the grass, looking at the stars, just thinking about how life can never be better?
Pretty much. I mean, I remember being down at the waterfront with her, you know, when the stars are, you know, in the middle of the night. I got like no sleep that summer. I mean, I was probably firing on 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night.
Is it because you were fucking every night?
Yes.
Okay.
Working during the day and then running off into the woods somewhere to, you know, find a place to hook up, you know.
Al fresco.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We did not worry about sleeping out under the stars.
Wow. How European of you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. juvederm.com. That's juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
So you have interviewed so many incredible people. And I mean, for The Advocate alone, you've done cover stories for Leslie Jordan, Jennifer Hudson, Brandi Carlile, Janelle Monáe. You've also interviewed Renee Zellweger, Ben Platt, Chris Evans, Margot Robbie, Viola Davis. Controversial question, but do any of those interviews or any interviews stand out as like really great surprises, as people being either more personable than you thought, or was there any of on the opposite side, either more intense or whatever you're willing to share about expectation versus reality?
You know, I have to say, I feel really, really lucky. I've had a lot of, I'm not being Pollyanna about this. I've mostly had incredible experiences with people. I mean, look, they know they're speaking with the press. And if you ask thoughtful questions, they're grateful for that, for one thing, because they get so many stupid questions. So if you try to be thoughtful and you're really talking about the work and not some other tangent, I think that they respond really well. One of my favorites was, I got to be in the room with Charlize Theron and Margot Robbie for Bombshell, which is intimidating, but they were lovely. And I got to ask Margot a question about that on-screen relationship with Kate McKinnon.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're doing these junkets, you get usually like 5 minutes and there's someone behind you going, wrap it up. And, you know, so there's a pressure there to try to get the questions in, get something good. So I asked Margot, I asked Charlize a question. I asked Margot this question, and it was close to being the wrap-up time, but Charlize, who's a big queer ally, turned to Margot and they started having a conversation about queer representation amongst themselves, which they're not going to cut them off. So I just let them go. I got this like really beautiful moment, but it was like generous because I could see she did that. And often
so generous.
It was really generous. And when I go in and say I'm with The Advocate, there are people who, well, Sharon Stone was one. You have to slate your name. Hi, I'm Tracy Gilchrist. I'm with The Advocate. And Sharon Stone went, I love The Advocate. Thank you for all the work you do. And, you know, occasionally we get that, which is really lovely. People who know what it is. So feel very lucky. I had a phone interview with Kate Winslet for Ammonite where she was talking about her hands for 5 minutes. I mean, I set it up. I was like, so many beautiful close-ups of your hands, Kate. And, you know, and you're doing so much work with your hands, which is, of course, a double entendre because her character is an artist of sorts and an archaeologist, but she's also, you know, fucking Saoirse Ronan. So
a lot of handwork there.
Yeah. So Kate went into it. And I was like, oh, my God, I thought I was going to pass out from that. You know, then she was talking about how she wasn't in a She was like, you know, I wanted to be isolated, like my character, Mary Anning. So I was staying in a cottage on a bluff with the ocean crashing. And so here in my brain, I'm picturing Kate Winslet in a white nightgown with a lantern running to close the shutters.
Well, if we may, Kate Winslet is another one of those people that I think transcends sexuality. It's like Kate Winslet, I guess a lot of the Kates, the Kate Blanchett of it all. Kate Winslet, obviously, in Titanic is one of the biggest references, but I had confusing thoughts. I think it's because the fucking in the car with the steamed windows, it felt so dangerous. And there's something very queer, I think, about fucking in a place that you might get caught. And also, it's like, you got to make it work. And I think that Kate really embodies that sexual energy coming from someone that you might would look at her on the street and not think about her being this like fucking, you know, fingering magician.
Well, have you seen Ammonite?
No.
Well, it's by Francis Lee, who did God's Own Country.
Okay.
He's a gay man. I love his films. I went to see it in 2020. I screened it all by myself at the Wilshire screening room because they wanted me to interview her. Everything was still on lockdown. It was a private screening. And there is a scene toward the end where Saoirse Ronan sits on Kate Winslet's face. And I thought I was going to die. I was looking around in this empty screening room to be like, is everybody seeing this?
You're seeing this? And then you're like, wait a minute, no one's seeing this. Cut to you're fully naked. Yeah. What a visual. But I think there's something also really empowering but also vulnerable about being, you know, Tracy Gilchrist. You're going on all these junkets saying you're from The Advocate. I think that's immediately outing yourself. You know, people would probably assume you're a queer person. And I think that for me with this podcast, obviously when I have people on that I really like, you obviously, who I really respect, and people that I've been hoping to talk to, they know what they're getting into. They're saying, okay, they know that it's called That's a Gay Ass Podcast. They know what the question is. But I think when you're in these junkets and you're saying, you're talking to people that are not necessarily doing a queer film or not necessarily going on a press tour to talk about anything that has to do with being gay or any queer themes. I think there's a vulnerability of saying, hi, I'm from this gay magazine. And it's almost like, in a way, coming out in a professional setting. And I think that's an interesting angle, because there is a moment where you have to decipher how they are responding to where you work.
Yeah. And I you're absolutely right. You know, Eric, I just want to say, I've listened to several of your podcasts. You are so insightful. And I just, the way that you interview folks, it's really fascinating because it's funny. And then you really get to the kernel of something. So.
Oh my God. Well, coming from you, I very much, that really gives me chilies. And I appreciate you saying that, because I really, really respect your work. So thank you.
Well, likewise. You know, I guess I do come out every time I slate my name. Occasionally I slate for out, so that's even more obvious. But
and I'm out.
And I haven't really thought about it that way, because I guess I feel like there's such a privilege in being able to do what I do, and you know, getting to represent these iconic, you know, really important brands that I grew up with and came out with. So there's such a privilege in it that I don't really consider it all that often. And I have put myself in bubbles my whole life, you know, from Connecticut. You know, I worked with a theater company. I work in queer media. I've really bubbled myself. But occasionally, you know, I'll get in the room with sometimes like a legendary cis straight white actor.
That's what I'm thinking
and
about.
They often have nothing to say. I'm like, I don't care if you are the biggest star. There, so few of them have had anything real to say. If you talk to BIPOC actors who are not queer, they've got something to say. If you talk to women, they've got something. But the straight, cisgender, white ones, I'm like, with some caveats. I thought Chris Evans was really lovely.
He's got
a gay brother, but he also gave so much space to Ana de Armas, because it was for the first Knives Out. So much space to talk, which was really generous. I thought that Daniel Craig was really lovely, and then some older ones: John Lithgow, great; Bill Nye, really wonderful. So Johnny,
love
Flynn,
to hear that.
It's, Johnny Flynn. The English ones are good too.
Well,
it's the Americans.
Listen, as someone who has had to come against a lot of asshole cis straight white men in America, I do not have any surprise. But to hear, like, you know, it makes sense, as Chris Evans is literally related to a gay brother who is, but I think, you know, it comes up so many times, but Chris Evans, for a lot of us young gay boys, and Not Another Teen Movie, when he has, like, there's like whipped cream and a banana sticking out of his fucking ass, and you're like watching this as a young man obsessed gay boy, and he, to hear his connection to the gay community and also just like him being a good guy, it is, we love to see that. And I'm giving Chris Evans some snaps, because he could, when you look like that, you could afford to be an asshole, but it sounds like he's not one.
Yeah, no, not, I mean, not in my personal experience, but I only spent about 7 minutes with him, so I
but those 7 minutes, honey, ooh.
Let me tell you, when you use them properly. And you did have a second part to that question about not great interviews.
Thank you.
There is someone, I don't know how to put it. This person is a lesbian. Is so ornery and hard to interview. I just don't care if I ever speak to this person again. They are in the they're in the music industry. Oh. And they're older. So
oh wow. I mean, I already have some. I have a couple of guesses, and God, what a, you know,
we can talk after.
Okay, we will. I just, you know, it's the gay gossip part of me is like loving to hear gossip, and then the gay like creator artist in me is like, fuck, you want, you know, it's I don't, not, this is not a headline podcast, but did you see the Jonathan Van Ness article that came out recently?
Maybe.
Basically, a bombshell article in the Rolling Stone about how not only have the Fab Five like had all these issues with Queer Eye, but then JVN fucking sucks is apparently what.
Oh,
and they
no, I
are,
didn't.
They have rage issues and yelling shit. And listen, I am the first to say that we have to take things with a grain of salt and boo, 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 boo. But when you hear about someone in our community having that reputation, it's the same thing with Ellen DeGeneres. When you hear stuff like that, it's like, fuck, like, I understand every community has the assholes, but it hurts.
Right.
Same thing as a Jewish person, too. When you hear about the fucking Weinsteins and the Epsteins and the other awful Steins, like, you're like, fuck, man. Like, we are supposed to be like healing the world and the menches. And so I thank you for giving the tea, but also I'm pouring one out for any of the mean fucking queens, man. Let's do better.
I know it's hard, but you know, there are bad people in every, you know, I think it's also difficult. Like, we get these famous folks, people who are representing for, and back to Ellen for a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had heard for years that she was difficult, and, you know, and then of course she did some very problematic things. However, it still doesn't change how I felt when she came out in 1997.
Yeah.
It doesn't change what that did for my life, for my, you know, ability to move through the world feeling like there was someone out there who was representing me on some level. And it sucks that she sucks, but it doesn't change that.
That's a great point. Yeah. That's a very good point. I think it's a great point because it helps us separate any guilt we would give ourselves for having felt those feelings for someone that might be difficult or sucks or is an asshole. Yeah. And I think that they cannot take away how it made us embrace ourselves. And I think that's a really, really insightful angle to that, because, you know, it's complicated when it comes to artists as well, musicians, whoever, who might have their problematic things, but if their music makes us feel a certain way or helped us embrace parts of us, it's like we are allowed to separate that. I do think this is actually a perfect segue to talk about other women who were very important to us by asking you the next famous podcast question, Tracy.
Yes.
If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Oh, Eric, I thought about this one for a very long time. First, because I am who I am, I had questions. I'm like, well, what are we using to define character actress? Were they ever an ingenue? Are they older now?
Ooh, she's an investigative journalist.
Were they only ever character actresses? Like,
I like these. Those are great questions. I think there absolutely is room for chapter changes of starting ingenue and then growing into character.
Well, that said, I mean, my original thought was Laura Dern.
Oh,
because she was an ingenue.
Delicious.
You know? And then, of course, you know, Wild at Heart and, you know, her Citizen Ruth is like one of my all-time favorite films.
Hmm.
But at the end of the day, if I'm really saving one and I'm picking this person, I could pick someone, you know, who is part of my world. And so I'm taking Holland Taylor.
Ah, so good. And let us be very clear. Not only is Holland an amazing character actress select, but to have you, a Carol fetishist, a lesbian queen, choose a lesbian queen who is talk about an age gap, honey. That is such a great answer. Oh, can you give us like, so Holland Taylor to you, was there an inciting incident for your love for her, or has it been a natural progression over your entire life?
Well, my first introduction to her was on The Practice,
the David Kelly
show.
Yes. Yeah. I would watch The Practice with my parents. Absolutely.
Well, Dylan McDermott. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. Huge, huge for us.
He's
Dylan.
A hunk.
Well, it's unfortunately whenever you give me a blue eye, I'm, my like, you know, inside anti-Semitism comes out. I'm like, wow, we usually don't have those. And anybody who has a blue eye means they're better, but he's also just gorgeous. But yeah, Holland Taylor, but talk about a powerful woman. I mean, yeah. Legally Blonde,
incredible. Oh my God. I actually forgot about Legally Blonde because
I was thinking about The Practice and I was like, wait, isn't she also giving like courtroom? And then yeah,
yes.
Legally Blonde.
And then in Debs, do you remember Debs? The movie about the...
Oh, yes!
This, from Angela Robinson about the spies.
Yes.
She's like the head of the spy school.
Oh.
But so all of that, right? Leading up to where she plays the art collector Peggy Peabody on The L Word, which is just... her scenes with Jennifer Beals. There's a scene later in the series where her character, Peggy Peabody, is speaking with Bette Porter, Jennifer Beals' character, about art, which is like, of course, spinning my wheels. And they're talking about, like, Holland has this line about how the surrealists love to fuck. I mean, that combination of sex and art just takes me out. So
yeah. I'm also, that takes me back to you in the movie theater by yourself watching Kate Damn Winslet just fucking soaking.
Saoirse Ronan. Yeah.
Sitting and soaking. the other Holland Taylor question I had for you is, do you ever fantasize about yourself in Sarah Paulson's place?
I do not. I think,
and I love the honesty.
I have a grand respect for Holland. I don't think that I mean, I don't know. She's probably really romantic and fun and hilarious. I probably would fantasize more about being in Holland's place.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Who doesn't love Sarah?
Yeah. Love Sarah Paulson. And she, there's something about her. I mean, her friendship with Pedro Pascal is, I think I definitely picture myself in his place of just being like queening out going to shows with her. And she's the type of person I think is like so talented, hardworking, but she doesn't take herself seriously. And I think that is one of, if not the number one quality I look for in like a close friend or any sort of relationship. Like, if you take yourself too seriously, what are we doing here?
Right.
No one knows what they're doing. The world's ending. Like, fuck it all.
But, and if anyone could take themselves seriously, it could be her. I mean, she's so endlessly talented.
Yes.
But that she doesn't is just a bonus. Yeah.
It really is. Stunning answer. Now, since we are, the time is ticking, I need to make sure that I ask any pressing final questions before we have to wrap things up. And I want to give you a mazel for having done the AIDS life cycle 7 times. Huge, huge, huge. Now, obviously, I'm sure most people listening know, but the AIDS life cycle, can you give us the pitch of what happens, the writing, and what the process is?
Sure. It is AIDS life cycle raises funds for the Los Angeles LGBT Center and the San Francisco AIDS Foundation to go to programs for AIDS research, prevention, education, services, et cetera. So I, you know, having come out in the 80s, I grew up in Connecticut. I spent a fair amount of time in New York City in the 80s, went to Pride in New York City, was incredibly affected by my gay brothers, you know, struggling with this horrible epidemic. I mean, of course, many kinds of people did, but of course, you know, through the Reagan administration's lack of giving a shit, it was really intensified. So, I mean, that's really where my activism was forged, was, you know, watching HIV AIDS just decimate people. So it's been a long time journey of mine. And so, yeah, so AIDS life cycle itself, the ride goes from San Francisco to LA over 7 days. It's approximately 545 miles. Sometimes you go on the coast, sometimes inland. You stay in camp every night, unless you're like me and my friends. We do what is called the Princess Tour, which is where we stay in hotels. But you have to book
good
them
for you.
Way ahead. Look, I love camp. I love being outside. I need to be close to a bathroom. I can't have a tent 3 inches from me where, you know, there's a lot of guys, you know, listen, your adrenaline's going. So there's a lot of sex that happens on AIDS life cycle.
Fuck. See, here's the problem. I was obviously going to ask you because of the important mission of it all, but I am just, I don't think I could handle the athleticism of biking that many miles.
No, no, no.
But when you pitch it about the fucking in the tents, I'm like, well, maybe I could just figure it out. Do a couple of stretches, you know.
Exactly. Just, yeah, make sure you're, you know, bend over at the waist at every rest stop and, you know, just kind of.
Oh, I will be.
Dangle.
Well, it's such a huge mazel that you've done it so many times. And I genuinely, like, am now going to reconsider doing it because it obviously for the mission, but also the adrenaline sounds kind of exciting.
It's incredible. I recommend everyone try it. Listen, I don't know how old you are, but you seem young and like in very good shape. The thing is, they take people who have never been on a bike before, train them from the ground up. You just start going on training rides. I still go on training rides just to keep going, even if I'm not doing the ride.
This is inspiring me. It really is. So
just get a good bike fit. That's the thing. That's the key. Make sure the bike fits well and, you know, and fine tune it.
Okay. That's a stunning pitch. So then to get us to the final moment of this interview, I need to ask you a question I did not prep you on, Tracy. And this question is, if all of the pop culture of your youth, if Girl Scout camp, if all of these gorgeous women and experiences made you queer, what is keeping you queer, Tracy? Is it a current pornography? Is it a interview you've had? Is it a show? Is it a sandwich? What's keeping you queer these days?
Oh, well, I have, you know, to kind of feed the dual sides of me, the show queen and the, like, the deep les of it.
Yeah.
I will give you the deep les. I have now seen Love Lies Bleeding 3 times, which is the Kristen Stewart film, which is wild. It's hot. It's so gay. So that's what's keeping me a lesbian.
That. Can you say the name of it again so we can make sure everyone really gets it?
Love Lies Bleeding. It's released March 8th, I think in LA and New York. And then it goes, no pun intended, it goes wide on March 22nd.
Well, that is another gorgeous pitch as well. And it's, of course, an A24 film. And A24. We love to see it.
And then I just have to give a shout out because this show helped. It's one of 3 shows that helped get me through the pandemic. Girls 5 Eva is coming back. I am obsessed with this show. I've watched the first 2 seasons probably 3 times through already. It's so packed.
The cast alone. I mean.
Yeah. Renee Elise Goldsberry, who... She just
cannot do any wrong. I mean, the most talented and gorgeous and everything.
All of that. So Renee, Paula Pell, Busy Phillips, and Sarah Bareilles. Like, and written, it's created by Meredith Scardino, but also produced by Tina Fey. And it has that very Tina Fey.
Yeah.
There's like that social commentary with ridiculousness kind of infused into it.
Yeah.
Or is it ridiculousness with social commentary infused? I don't know. But that's kind of
tomato,
more like
tomato.
My gay man side.
Oh, I love that side. I mean, such great answers. And I cannot be more thrilled to have been able to have this opportunity to talk with you. So before we officially sign off, Tracy, thank you so much for coming on. And tell us, where can we follow you and what do you want to let us know about?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram. And I don't think I'm going to be on X much longer, but Instagram, Threads, my Facebook page, it's all Tracy E. Gilchrist. So T-R-A-C-Y, middle initial E, Gilchrist, G-I-L-C-H-R-I-S-T, at Instagram or Threads or wherever. So that's where you can follow me. And yeah, I think that's the big thing. I'm very excited to speak with you this week. It's such an exciting week. I am going to the Oscars on Sunday. So
huge. Well, mazel on going to the Oscars, mazel on such an incredible legacy and career. And I cannot wait to have more run-ins and gay conversations in the future. And truly bless you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Tracy E. Gilchrist for being such an incredible guest and just a person who makes me proud to be gay as fook. If you would like more gay assery, go to the Patreon for this week's gay ass sex diary that is called The Guy Who Got a Blowjob in a Texas Roadhouse. I don't think I need to pitch it much more, but we do get into some really exceptional sex stories, and we learn some do's and don'ts about sex parties, bathhouses, and more. That's at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, tag us on Instagram at gayasspodcast, and I am at Eric Wills, and I'll see you next week for another perfect guest.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.